Hey everybody, Jonathan Dorr with you once again. Welcome to the Catholic Teacher Podcast. So good to have the pleasure of your company, as always. Thanks for the work you're doing in Catholic education all over the world. One of the great things about social media is that I get to interact with so many interesting Catholic teachers around the world. So please make sure, if you do use Twitter or Facebook, please make sure you're following on Twitter or Facebook, because I'd love to say hi to you there. Also on Instagram, so usually wherever you're hearing the podcast, you'll have access to the social links, the social feeds, so please come and say hi so I can keep sending you some great content there. I really think, you know, Catholic education is about being encouraged at this moment in history. There's a lot of pressures, a lot of challenges, there's a lot of intensity and demands. So really the mission that I feel on my heart at the moment is just to encourage and inspire and resource you. So please make sure you're staying in contact with us. You probably know this, but I do a very simple daily email, 8 o'clock every morning, just a beautiful quote to encourage you for the day. So please make sure you're looking for the links wherever you're hearing this. Would you please subscribe if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Android, anywhere you're hearing this, please hit the subscribe button, leave a comment. All that does is it allows us to get the episode to you every time, and it also increases the ranking of the podcast so that it's easier for people to type in Catholic Education Teacher Podcast and find us. So please, if you could subscribe, that would be a big help. Last things from me, if you want me to come and speak at your school or your diocese or your conference, please do that. I've got a huge list of videos you can watch, you can see me doing keynotes, you can read feedback and endorsements, so if I can be helpful to you, please come and do that. Okay, what else? Please check out the link to the Going Deeper program. It's a free trial. It's an amazing, enormously huge formation program for Catholic schools and teachers. Very inspirational. We're offering a completely free trial at the moment, so make sure you take that Going Deeper free trial. Could you just share the links for this podcast? If you're hearing the podcast, grab a link, post it on your social feeds, put this in front of other teachers. So now, down to business. I want to get straight into the introduction. This is a very special episode with the wonderful Lucy Robinson from Angelorum College in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. I just like what they're doing. Angelorum is a startup Catholic school. It's an independent Catholic school. A whole bunch of great parents got together and just really pulled together and trusted God. And you're going to hear Lucy talk about, you know, how when God's behind something, it sort of comes together, because in our own capacity, it would be impossible for us to sort of climb over all the obstacles and challenges. So I love what Angelorum's doing. I believe it's an authentic attempt to bring a rich Catholic tradition of excellence and pastoral care and joy and a family spirit to education. So Lucy's going to share all that good stuff with us, and she's got some great stuff at the end on the practical tips for self-care for Catholic teachers. I really think that's so crucial that every episode we're talking a bit about how we get you to take care of you. All right, that's it from me. Sit back, relax, enjoy. Have a daiquiri or a pina colada, whatever it is you do. Hopefully it's not 8 in the morning, but whatever you do, just to sit back and relax and enjoy another great episode of the Catholic Teacher Podcast. I'm Jonathan Dorr, going to speak to you again at the very end. Hey, Lucy Robinson, welcome to the Catholic Teacher Podcast. So good to have you with us.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's great to be here.
Well, we were talking before off air, and we were saying that basically you were sitting around one day with way too much time on your hands, and you thought, why don't I do something simple and straightforward and start a new Catholic school from scratch? Is that right?
Yes, that's pretty well it. I did. I just felt I've got lots of friends with big families, and while we would have loved 10 children ourselves, we're very blessed with the two that we have. But our youngest is 11 now, and I just figured, well, what is my excuse, really? I've got these beautiful friends of mine with 6, 7, 8 children who are just doing the most incredible jobs with them, and they were really my inspiration. And I felt, well, that if we have a need as a family for an independent Catholic school, well, perhaps we're not the only ones. And so that kind of spurred on the motivation to start this project.
I mean, let's just jump into it. I mean, even now, I mean, you guys are only a relatively short way into this journey. How have you seen the presence and the action of God in this journey? Is it a case of he's just brought the right people together, that the same needs been expressed? Like, usually when we try to do this stuff in our own strength, it ends up going all over the place. But what's been your experience of the action of God in this so far?
I think that if we had any doubts about it initially being the action of God, we have absolutely none whatsoever now. Like right from the beginning, my husband and I really actually we prayed that the Lord would close the door on the project, to be honest.
Please close the door.
Yes, because, you know, we're not coming from a perspective of being experienced educators other than 9 years with our own home educating our own children. And we really just had nothing, although you do see, like in hindsight, how the Lord prepares you through other avenues for the sorts of things you have to do. Like, you know, that just happens as well. But the Holy Spirit just would bring the right people along at the right time. We would pray before every meeting we'd have that was like a kind of game changer meeting, you know, will it go ahead or won't it, for the Lord to close the door if it really wasn't his will. And every time we thought, oh, yes, this is just, you know, this is going to fall over, right, this meeting will be the one where they say, look, I'm sorry or whatever. Or when we applied to the non-state schools accreditation board, you know, the same thing. And every step of the way, the door's not just been flung open, but like there's been people come along that have just helped push us through to the next stage. So I would have to say absolutely, there's no doubt that God's guided the project.
It's such an awesome feeling in life when that happens. Like, I think all of us can point to a couple of moments in life where things happen almost way beyond our own capacity. I'm listening to you, I'm like, I wish somebody would write a book about how to make that part happen more often, because I think,
yes, I
think
I
often
know.
It's that tension, isn't it, between our own human desire to make things happen and also partnering with what God's trying to do. There's a whole bunch of stuff I want to ask you. So, you know, in the intro, I've explained more about Angelorum College, but let me ask you this. The journey towards starting an independent Catholic school, what were you looking for? Like, what were you hoping for your own children, for students that would come? What was your fundamental desire? What were you hoping to create?
As a family, we felt very strongly led to be guided by the Holy Family in our own spirituality. And out of that, I guess, we've taken things a year at a time with regards to the education of our children. And so home education for us was a way to be able to live that reality out with a greater freedom. And so it helped form us as a family. So this project's very much come out of an extension of our family life and a way that we could continue to foster and nurture and replicate that sense of a call to holiness within an education framework, so that you're not just looking at the academics or the facilities or whatever, whether it's, you know, locally located school or whatever it might be, but we're really looking fundamentally at a school that's focus is about the call to holiness and how that's best lived out in a family context. And then so all the decisions in the school about our time allocations and how we structure our day and the sorts of teachers we have here and the religious that come into the school, that's our focus with everything, is really how do we encourage that call to holiness in the families that we have in 2018 and the challenges of family life. And I think families need to have a bit of slack, you know, because it's just families are under attack. And if there's a way that the school can help to nurture what's happening in the family in terms of growing their children in the faith, then we're seeking to do that in the context of the school. And as well as that, we have distance education as well as a day school, so that those families who are ongoing in their home education journey can still be provided with a way of registering legally to teach their children, but in that distance ed context. So that at this stage in Australia, there is a small senior program for distance ed for Catholics in Australia, but otherwise there's no Catholic distance education option for families in Australia at the moment, where you can actually enrol your child and be legally registered for the sake of government compliance, but teach with a Catholic framework. So that was another big motivation for us.
It's interesting listening to you, that you talk about how the school can kind of support the family in its journey towards holiness as, I guess, the domestic church. And where we've got our kids at school at the moment, they have this thing called date night, which is where they really encourage you to bring your children, or bring the kids back into school, and they put on activities and stuff till about sort of 7:30 so that parents can actually go out on a date together. And it was fascinating. It was just like Karen had to explain it to me about three times. I said, what? They look after your kids so you can go out to dinner. And they're like, Karen's like, yeah.
So that's great.
Was a really interesting way that it's probably not something, you know, often many school environments are so intense and busy that there isn't a lot of bandwidth for schools to do that without that sort of paradigm of how does the school and family really interpenetrate and support each other. But on that, I wanted to ask you, a lot of the great thinking on Catholic education from a lot of the great founders, I'm thinking of people like Marcellin Champagne, was that, and even the church documents on education talk about it, this family environment. So explain that to us. So for all the teachers listening, help us understand better this concept of a family feel or a family environment within the school context.
Well, I think it's probably a little easier for us at the moment because we have the single prep to six classroom and the single year 7 to 10 class, so that you've got a very much a multi-age environment. And so it does tend to replicate in a practical way more easily the family environment. And I think one of the blessings of having been in the home education environment is that how well socialized students or children are across many age levels rather than just with their same age peers.
Yeah.
So that in a sense is probably a fundamental component of the culture here. So the older students will interact very freely with the younger ones, and there's not this sort of same division of, well, you're a primary schooler, we're not going to talk to you, or, you know, whatever it might be. There's very much an integration, and I don't know whether you get that at too many schools. You probably find it maybe in country schools a bit more often. So that family environment, and also having students' families involved in the school itself, like just coming in as volunteers freely, like not having that sort of concern that, you know, if you have parents come in, they'll take over and they'll be detrimental to my education program. Like, they're very much about how can parents, by and large, would like to help. I mean, I'm sure you get difficult situations arise from time to time, but they can be dealt with. But it's more about, I guess, having that integration of the two. And for me, like, I love being here and having my kids here and seeing them every day, and my son's in year 10 and my daughter's year 6. And yeah, like, I think that's actually adds to it. And I'm not the only one. Another member of our staff has her 5 children enrolled here, and so she sees them every day. So there's a certain amount of just a family culture in terms of the staff and students themselves as well.
It's really interesting listening to you, because it's funny that I've often thought that, well, my mantra for years has been that the Catholic Church has the greatest product in the world with the worst marketing department. And it's like this concept of creating a family culture, because I know that there's a fair bit of thinking going around at the moment that even year levels are a relatively arbitrary kind of construct. I mean, when I was doing seminars, I used to say, look, the secondary school system, high school system as we know it, only really emerged at the start of the 20th century.
There was
changes in technology, which meant that US kids didn't need to be on farms as much, and they all of a sudden they needed to group kids into these big cohorts. But interestingly, a lot of very exclusive schools have gone down the vertical house system, where you've got the year 12s directly involved in the lives of the primary kids or the year 7 kids. So it's, I guess my point is that often what Catholic schools, like what you're doing, organically figure this stuff out. And then we kind of have experts come along a decade later and go, oh, yeah, we should do this. It's the latest theory. It's going, no, we've been doing this for a while. Look, I wanted to pick up a couple of points in what we've discussed previously. You're a huge believer in this incredibly central Catholic concept in education of parents as primary educators. I think it's been lost. I think it's been lost globally for complex reasons. Mm. I think often what's happened is teachers have been thrust into this professionalized expertise role. Parents are busy. Parents are often trying to do so much, and that there's been a not necessarily a deliberate denigration of the role of parents, but definitely many parents are just not conscious of how central their role is across different areas of formation. Give us your take on primary educators. Help people who haven't heard that concept understand it a bit better.
I think there has been a great loss of confidence amongst parents to educate their own children, and it's almost like I think education has been divorced to some degree from the home, whereas you were saying about the modern education system, you know, for thousands of years, children learnt from their parents, not just till they could walk and talk, but right through to their trade and how to run a business and how to support their own families when they grew up and things like that. So there was much more of that kind of dynamic happening. But I think with the rise, not just of the, like you say, the educational professionals, but just psychology professionals in terms of parenting guides and how to parent properly and that sort of scary, oh no, I'm going to mess my child up for life sort of thing, that yeah. There's been this very hands-off approach from parents' side too. I don't think it's just been the educators. I think parents have lost confidence in their own abilities to school their own children. You know, I think if they kind of could get the sense that actually education, like teaching a child to read, is just an extension of teaching them to tie their shoelaces or use a knife and fork or, you know, many, many skills that parents, how to cross the road safely or whatever it might be, perhaps, you know, there would be more of a dynamic that was more fruitful for both. And educators would perhaps feel less of this onus of actually being the pseudo parent. Like, that's not really the role of the educator. You're there as a privileged delegate of the parents who are the primary educators to help them to, you know, for their child to flourish in certain areas of their academics and their spiritual life. But certainly you could never replace a parent in terms of, even if that parent's terrible, like there's just no replacing them in terms of, or terrible in your opinion, like there's no replacing them in terms of the role that parent has in the life of their child and their own journey.
So this is the Catholic principle of subsidiary, right, which a lot of people
haven't
heard,
exactly.
Which is basically that what the school does is help subsidize and support the fundamental work that's happening in the home. And my sense now that this is really missionary work now, because I guess there's a couple of parts to this, is that great schools have to actually help parents understand the dignity and the magnitude of their own role, right?
They've actually got to go, hey,
this is your God-given mandate. You can't outsource it. As you said, not in a judgmental sense, but how do we encourage, how do we resource and inform and educate parents to really step into this space? You've also mentioned we've just touched on it, but the professionalization of the education space. A lot of our media cycle, you know, and I say this in seminars to teachers, is academics have to publish. They publish a report. They do a press release. The media cycle is always looking for content. So next thing you know, there's some new big educational mandate crisis. And teachers seem to be constantly caught in this pressure of, well, I think the way you've expressed it is that some teachers can lose confidence in their own capacity and ability because of this hyper-professionalization, this constant inundation of experts saying this, and this. Well, look, what's your experience so far around helping teachers to have confidence in their own abilities? And I think you've mentioned just backing their own ability to know an individual student.
I think that is the crux of, I mean, it's been a big learning curve for me, because my experience prior to this, I was not in education. So my training and my profession prior to home education wasn't in education myself. And then I've only educated my own children, who I know very well. And so coming into the school environment has been a really interesting journey for me to see from the other perspective, from teachers, and how they struggle with, as you say, these really significant external pressures that they have, or they feel that they have, in terms of compliance and how does this match up to ACARA, or, you know, the whatever the particular standard is that they're following. And it's almost like it needs to be turned on its head. Like you say, like, you need to know the individual student first and then know what nourishes them, what nourishes their spirit, and or nourishes a group of students, you know, and what is a nourishing thing. And then And then you can take the achievement standards and match them to this beautiful thing that you're doing, because likely what you're doing is very rich and very and they're learn and this learner focused and individualized and all these beautiful things about education that make it a really rich experience for the teacher as well. And so how to do that from that perspective and then match it to these outcomes, almost rather than, I see a lot of curriculum that's written, basically it takes the outcomes and it writes for them and it just reads like a textbook and it's so dry. And I just think if you had to do that for years, I just can't imagine how that would just destroy the spirit of someone who really loved the kids and loved education, just to see that approach taken.
It's what I call it, the simple equation. I did a seminar for the diocese at Bridgeport, Connecticut, just north of New York last year, and I did this keynote around what I call the simple equation, which is the time and energy are finite resources. So every teacher only gets so much time and every individual teacher only has so much energy. But expectations and pressures are increasing exponentially. What we're seeing is this constant pressure to do more and more and more and to tick more and more boxes and to be across. There's this kind of tension, isn't there, between the genuine healthy desire to be professional, to be an expert, to master your craft as an educator, without simultaneously losing that deeply pastoral human element. Often, again, to quote Champagne, he said that, you know, to educate young people, we must first love them, and we must love them all equally. So how are you guys going about that? Tell us a little bit about what you're doing there at Angelorum to keep that human element there. How do you keep that with all the pressures and expectations around curriculum and everything else? How does your culture sustain a human element?
Look, I'd have to be lying if I said it was easy, because it does take a lot of trial and error. And I think I can only sort of fall back on my experience as a home educator and going, well, there were times when I didn't get it perfect. Being not perfect doesn't mean deliberately being negligent either. It just means that I kick the goals the majority of the times, but not always. So that's our approach a bit, is we're seeking to aspire to not just meet but exceed the standards in many ways, because our students have really, we're fostering that love for literature and that love for good literature, not just what I like to call McDonald's for your brain, but, you know, just books that just don't inspire and that aren't well written. And so trying to sort of make that a focus and make the love of the subjects a focus in the context that we have, I think is, but as you say, it's a tension and it's definitely a pressure that is always there to try and do that. I think one of the things we've done too is sought out expert advice in this area about how best to try and implement a continuum approach for learners, so that they're not so much, you know, you're in this year level, so by the end you must finish whatever, but more individualized, where we can actually really assess, like you say, independent almost of year levels, what level our students are up to.
So in all of this desire to build a great love of learning itself, of literature, what are the core hopes for Angelorum? What are you trying to create there? What are your ultimate How do you see this school advancing the mission of the church itself, or the role of parents? What's the outcome here?
To basically do as the Lord called us, to go and make disciples of all nations in the context of the family. And I think if we can play a small part, if parents give us that opportunity to share in the journey of their own path to holiness, and that we can provide them with the support they need to enhance that with their children, then I think that is ultimately our goal. So students will leave Angelorum formed in their faith and able to know what they believe and to dialogue with the broader culture about it and engage the culture in a way that they would not necessarily be able to do without that support. I'd like to see us be able to grow our distance education option for families, so that there was a Catholic distance education option Australia-wide that we could then really support families on their journeys to be able to provide that Catholic formation for their children.
Look, it's amazing, isn't it? Like, it struck me recently. My kids at the moment are 10, basically 10, 9 and 8. Mm-hmm. I've been doing some more postgrad through Franciscan University in Steubenville, and I just did a unit in catechesis, and it just completely blew my mind that I, as a, you know, as a seriously well-formed Catholic, that I hadn't really thought about this, that the catechizing of new Christians or students, that just how central it's been to the entire history of the faith. And I think we've probably come through about a 100-year block where everybody just assumed it was happening by osmosis. But now, like, I have to, with my son, like, I've got these books each night on catechesis, and the creed, you know, just trying to read him a bit of the creed each night so he understands a little bit more each night. And then at Mass on Sunday, I've got the Mass book there, and now he understands the creed. He knows when it comes in the Mass. And you've got to go at that stuff all the time.
Because
you only get them for, you know, for sort of 20 years or 18 years, really. And, you know, they're probably not really open to deep formation until they're a bit older. So, yeah, I'm just fascinated by the actual work involved to help any young person really grow in their faith.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing, is you cannot assume knowledge that people